Hello and welcome to a new episode of the EG Property Podcast. And today I am joined by our very own Graham Schoen. And we are here to talk about a really excellent piece of research intelligence that Graham has put together, looking at what this working from home situation that we've all been put in since the start of the COVID outbreak really means for real estate, and some really interesting insights into not just what it means for offices, but what it means for retail and residential too. So Graham, hey, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for that sterling introduction as well. Big and impressive plug for the report. No, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am very well. I'm working from home.
Yeah, I'm a little bit. We're recording this on Thursday. I believe it was Tuesday when the advice actually came out, and I was due to go back in on Wednesday, and I sort of decided quite late on Tuesday night that I would heed the government advice this time and stay at home. But I'm already missing my one day back in the office, and just kind of recalibrating my mind into a longer period of working from home, as I'm sure a lot of people are as well now. Otherwise all sound. So this the piece that obviously went out for free download this week, this was a bit of a long look during the first lockdown. Decided to get my head down really and try and pour through what this what working from home would actually mean in a broader sense for real estate. I think this kind of pulls on a wider thread about how the urban environment has to react now to the fact that we have become, to coin a phrase that began at the start of this century around the 2000s with Tony Blair, basically a knowledge economy. So one that basically relies on office workers increasingly in order to power the kind of other sections of the economy. You look at things like job growths in professional, scientific and technological activities or administrative and support. They've all grown over the last 10 years, and things like retail and manufacturing have dropped. So you're looking basically at a base of people, and it hugely matters where they are during the working week in order to support other business sectors, basically. So what this was really a look at the areas that have a large amount of office employment and a large amount also of office working residents, and how those relationships kind of work with regards to retail, and also discussing kind of wider trends around where people might look to live as well. When we talk about kind of the economy, one of the real kind of standout figures for me was that if you look at office stock by local authority, and you look at the top 10% in terms of, you know, the ones with the most amount or the largest amount of office buildings, so you've got 10% of the country that basically contributes just under 35% of gross value added in terms of overall productivity to the UK economy. So you're looking at places that really hugely punch kind of above their weight, and obviously those are, as you'd expect, some of the kind of city centres, a lot of kind of city centre councils and boroughs within that. And so when we talk about this kind of this working pattern shift, we can't really get away from the fact that it is probably going to be cities that are going to be kind of broadly and kind of more acutely affected within that. And what's also interesting is I've looked recently for a different report at the kind of infection rate per 100,000 population. And a lot of those city centre councils are actually are kind of the ones that are noticeably above the averages. If you look at kind of Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle, Glasgow, like Liverpool, of course, as well. And so the government's basically trying to balance this line in the immediate term between opening up the economy so that that gross value added can maybe be realised in some respects. But it's also, it's the classic case of basically people, or a lot more people kind of going into those areas. Those city centre populations during the day traditionally are obviously huge, and that is kind of the associated risk with transmitting this virus. And I think that's partially what we have seen, even without office workers massively going back in yet. So I think the average kind of worker footfall, according to Centre for Cities High Street Recovery Tracker, for the kind of key 13 or so regional cities, is around about 17% of pre-lockdown levels. So I can kind of understand in the immediate sense why the government has kind of just reversed the advice and told people to work at home if they can, because I think in terms of kind of just the immediate spread of this, they're kind of probably wanting to stop the spread almost at source and not risk people kind of using public transport and communal indoor spaces like offices. But thinking kind of, you know, in the broader kind of long-term sense of this, I think what was interesting, I think at the start of lockdown and at the start of when people were ordered to work from home, is I think there was a lot of almost, I found it sort of gleeful, celebratory rejection of the office space. And maybe that was because it was kind of prevalent at the time. It was generating a lot of kind of national headlines about the office is dead and, you know, we can work from home forever. Why do we need to pay for a communal space? And I remember thinking at the time that was you know, a little bit strange and almost a bit too extreme, and kind of missing some of the points that are relevant within office occupation. And then after a few months, that almost that shifted the other way. There was a kind of more extreme reaction to it of get back quote unquote to work, as if people working from home weren't doing anything. And in reality, what I think we've seen from a lot of the studies and a lot of the surveys done during this during that kind of interim period is that most employers, and I think most workers, would prefer to have a balance. I mean, there's a reason why it's called a work-life balance. It's because your time spent in the office is away from family. And while it's probably been nice for people in the immediate aftermath of lockdown to enjoy those benefits of no commute and spend more time with family, the reality is, as discussed in the report, that commuting and office occupation by employees does give us that sort of temporal separation and delineation of where we work versus kind of where we live. And I think after a few months, that sort of office is dead and we reject it and all that, this kind of stuff, gave way a little bit, I think, to people looking forward to going back in, to being able to do more tasks perhaps in the office that they may have been able to do sort of at home, but not to the extent that they had done before. And a lot of, we know obviously a lot of businesses rely really on meeting, on face-to-face. And really for the office sector in particular going forward, it will be about how occupiers in particular value the face-to-face aspect of their work versus the kind of remote aspect and the concentrated work maybe that people feel more able to do at home.
And what do you think people that I'm talking to in the market believe that they, you know, this is going to lead to change, sort of long-lasting change in the way that people think about the office space that they operate? And you know, we've seen lots of headlines around that. What we haven't seen so many headlines around is the other impacts of working from home. So I guess question number one from me would be, what do you see as the lasting impact on office development or office demand? And then if we can move into, you know, the long-term impacts around residential, because you had some really interesting insights into the commuter belt and what that might look like going forward. And also, you know, a little bit of maybe some good news for the retail market.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go through those in order if I remember the order right. So office demand is really interesting. I think if we think about that in a nationwide sense. A lot of the kind of overall quantum of office demand hugely depends on economic recovery. Mainly because I think if you have, when we think about kind of, supply demand characteristics within kind of built up office markets, I think the discussions around those have hugely changed, both like qualitatively and from a statistical point of view as well. And I think a lot of that hinges on sophisticated occupier requirements. So you think about kind of 10, 15 years ago, people generally weren't talking about connectivity within buildings. I don't believe people were talking about well-being. Although those kinds of aspects, it was largely like location based. And I think now it's drifted into becoming a bit more stock based, a bit more quality of stock based. So kind of rental profiles, I think, are much more banded by the actual quality of the overall stock available. I think on an individual company basis, what has been interesting, there was a survey by Accumulate Capital, which was released last month. They surveyed, I think, 500 board members, managers, and 73% expected COVID-19 to encourage downsizing within a year. But interesting, actually, only a much smaller percentage of those surveyed actually will relocate in that time frame. So I think basically what's happening is that board members and managers of large office occupiers or significant office occupiers are saying, yeah, like we think we're probably going to downsize, but a lot of them are basically, I think, just a little bit kind of recalibrated in their own situations and going, oh no, we're not going to do that within a year, mainly probably because they're unable to, given kind of the length of their lease or maybe the minutiae of their lease agreement. But I'd say that's maybe instructive as to what people generally think around office occupation. I think with the remote working happening as it has, this is almost an overnight acceleration of what could have been a decade-long shift into people working 3 days at home each week, coming into the office twice. But it happening overnight is something tough, I think, for the sector to deal with in such a short space of time, because it may be that the economic shock means that in quantum terms, we are oversupplied for office space in general over a period of time. But it might be that we aren't oversupplied in terms of the really high caliber, high grade office stock that is being increasingly demanded by occupiers of all different types and all different sectors. So in the immediate term, I would expect that there will be a bit of a correction in general in the office markets, generally, particularly in city centres that are obviously having to provide huge quantums of space for occupation. You may see vacations due to, as I say, economic circumstances or simply downsizing if businesses are able to do so. But then, as the economy recovers over time, it almost depends on the level that actually gets to and how quickly, because people are still going to need some office space, I believe. I believe most businesses within some of the sectors that have powered the growth of the country, some of the tech operators, I believe, will still require communal space. Interestingly, I believe there was a study, I think again done last month, on trading floors in the financial sector. And the trading floors that kind of were able to safely congregate in their office actually outperformed those that were done remotely. So I think again that's going to be instructive as to some financial sector occupation. But again, this all depends on the number of businesses that are able to either start up or expand or move into certain places or certain markets within the country. But I think, given the immediacy of this shock, I think there'll be a short-term sort of downward correction, maybe in some rental profiles and in some markets. They should be able to recover longer term because, as I say, our economy is structured in a way that requires those kind of knowledge businesses and those kind of huge value-add businesses to have or in order to expand, they probably will need some form of office presence. For residential, this is possibly one of the most interesting ones, and the one that doesn't have that we're going to have to really wait for data on. So you're kind of going with with gut feeling. But I think so much of the relationship between where we live and where we work is defined by commutes. And I think areas that have an over reliance on proximity to big office centres and big kind of, you know, large swathes of office space and lots of businesses, I think if you're overly reliant on that, I think you might struggle. Because I think, again, if the general split is 3-2 either way, what that means, as in 3 at home or 3 at home, 2 in the office, 3 in the office, 2 at home, whatever happens with that, it means, I think we in the report have called it commute maths. Basically, the amount of time that people commute each week. If you do 1 hour each way now, that means you're commuting for, 10 hours a week. And if you kind of shrink that down into 2 days and you do, 2 hours commute a day or something like that, knowing that you'll have 3 days sat at home, not having to, go through the commute, it probably does open up a few more areas in terms of being kind of within the commuter belt or the acceptable commuter belt for those kind of, those areas where we've got a real high concentration of office space currently. So I feel like there will be a little bit of an expansion of commuter belts generally. I think the kind of, or you could say the gravitational, I guess, field of cities might just naturally grow almost beyond the immediate sort of suburby areas and outwards into maybe into other towns, maybe more rural areas as well. Again, it kind of depends on who's buying places over the next few years, and it could well be that it's younger workers who, during kind of lockdown in this period, have largely had to be in rental flats without any outdoor space. And it's all kind of about that emotional, I suppose, connection with what you're actually after from a home and what you're actually needing. And I think for a lot of people, like, this year might have just pushed the idea of outdoor space up the agenda very, very slightly. And then also with the immediacy of this shock around working patterns and the segmentation of work, both of those aspects may kind of coalesce into people kind of looking a little bit further out further out in comparison to what may have historically been acceptable in terms of kind of commuting times if you're doing it 5 days a week.
It'd be interesting, won't it, to see if that also has an impact on the sort of type of home that is built out in the suburb. You know, will we start to see BTR be developed in the suburbs, or, you know, is it going to be the traditional house that I'm sat in right now that is very, very suburban? So that'll be an interesting trend to keep an eye on too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fundamentally design of those places is going to be will be interesting, I think, over the next few years. I'll be surprised if you got too much BTR kind of out in those areas. I feel like I feel like BTR is generally for your, well, I could be wrong. I'm happy to have my assumptions challenged, but most, I think, BTR has been relatively close to city centres and trying to tap into, I guess, the ambitions of certain people to be very, very close to where they work, and also kind of, you know, feeding off, I guess, the buzz of being in such a prime central location that they might not otherwise have been able to afford in terms of either purchasing a home or similar. So I'd imagine you'll see maybe a little bit more kind of, you know, home building out in those kind of suburby and satellite town locations. But it all kind of feeds into kind of localized demand, and what are the actual hotspots going to be in that sense. You know, I can say, you know, London might, you know, get a few notches on its commuter belt, but there might be certain areas, you know, in the southeast or maybe in the kind of northwest that are actually more acutely popular in terms of people moving out. We'll see kind of how exactly that plays out. With the kind of home analysis in the report, I did kind of split it into local authorities and by, you know, whether they're urban or kind of more rural, that kind of sliding scale. And when you look at kind of a whole decade long, the urban councils have seen much higher, you know, average residential price growth than the rural ones. But as you get closer to sort of, you know, the smaller time series, so say rather than 09, like 2009 to 19, you do 2015 to 2019, it's a lot closer. So some of those areas, some of those kind of less built up dense areas are already beginning to see similar kind of average price growths to the city centres, you know, which did sort of lead the recovery, I suppose. Mm. But we're kind of, yeah, going that one step further, I think some of those kind of smaller cities and towns and maybe a little bit more rural areas, which would kind of fit the profile of being those kind of wider areas for a city's kind of gravitational pull. Some of those are beginning to match the urban ones for price growth, and there may even be a chance with this kind of working pattern shift for some of them to even outstrip them.
Hmm. And you mentioned there that, you know, people want to live close to the buzz of a city centre. I wonder, and this will bring us around to the retail question, I suppose, that, you know, is that buzz still there in the city centre? And have we, through being at home more, created or are on the road to creating more of a buzz at home in our local high streets?
Yeah, it's just a fair question. I mean, it won't be there at the moment. I think, again, going back to the recovery tracker, I think footfall generally within cities is about two-thirds, or at least at the start of September is about two-thirds of, and this is the 13 big regional cities that are going to be in our UK cities supplement relatively soon, I think. So yeah, it's about two-thirds of normal. So it isn't there the moment. That's not to say that it won't come back, you know, within a year, vaccine perhaps permitting, if that's the kind of Rubicon that needs to be crossed in order for people to live life you know, a little bit more more quote unquote normally than they had done before. Buzz at home is it that's interesting actually as well, because some of the smaller cities and or larger towns have actually seen footfall that's higher now than it was pre-lockdown. So maybe there is an element of the buzz kind of, you know, being almost diverted, I guess, from city centres over into the smaller towns and commuter areas. And that was something that I wanted to look at really closely within this report, because, again, as I said at the start of this, the crucial thing for loads of businesses like retail, leisure, hospitality in general, so much of where you're targeting kind of disposable income is in where the white collar workers are for the majority of their time, you know, or however you want to segment their time. And basically, I think I would encourage people to, if they're kind enough to download the report, to look at the tables where I split basically the country, or at least England and Wales, into where office workers work and where they live. And if you look at, we're looking at kind of proxies for high street health, I suppose. And we've used the like just general occupation. So looked at an availability rate. So looked at overall retail stock and how much of that is available. And the lowest median retail availability rate estimates are in both of the top sections for where office workers are working currently and also where they're living. And I think if you kind of scroll down those tables, as it gets kind of lower, in terms of lower kind of concentration of white collar employment or white collar dwellers, those figures get substantially worse. So I think if there is a bit more, or at least what the expected increase in kind of in office workers kind of staying at home during working weeks, there should be an associated I guess uplift in some kind of retail centres, if depending on whether they do choose to indeed you know, patronise businesses closer to their homes. There's loads of different scenarios as well that you can tease out of this. Let's say if there's a, you know, a couple, or, you know, however you want to define it, if one is working in the city and one's working at home, if they want to like go and have dinner out somewhere or something after work, like the one that's at home isn't going to come into the city necessarily, and then they both take the train home. The one that's kind of working in the office is going to go, you know, and go on the train home, the normal home commute, and they're going to meet there. Whereas if they're both, say, working in the same city, they might meet out somewhere closer to or equidistant between where they both work, and then patronise that business. I'm just thinking about all these various different scenarios that happen during the day and during the working week that are going to change. And you think like that scenario multiplied by thousands in various different locations, I think is almost always going to mean a little bit of a shift in terms of where that disposable income is spent and how healthy some of those other areas are going to end up being. And also the extent to which that kind of daytime patronage of white collar workers, can it be supplemented or supplanted, I should say, by something else? Is there another way that you can recreate those people in the aggregate, whether by increased tourism, increased offers to a resident student population that occasionally has to be in the city centre or town centre for any reasons? I think all of these different types of questions that mentioned, I think, in the report, but it's worth anyone kind of invested in the kind of built environment within these areas is going to have to start thinking about these changes and how they kind of curate their offer adequately to businesses that are going to end up proliferating in some of these areas and hopefully succeeding in whatever the new normal is that we end up crafting.
The new normal, yes, whatever that might be. I should apologise just in case people heard a buzz right here. There is some works going on in my house, so apologies if.
Oh, was there a buzz?
There was a buzz that added to Graham's points, but hopefully it didn't come through too much. But there's so much in that three-part report that we've pulled together into one easily downloadable report for everyone. Radius subscribers, of course, will have seen this already. You've got early access to it as a subscriber and a mag subscriber too. But now, given Boris's latest statement, we thought we would be very nice and hand it out further to people, because I think it can be really useful for this industry just to take a measured look at how these shifting working patterns really do or can impact the wonderful world of real estate. So we will put a link to the report in this in the blurb with this podcast. And Graham, if people want to get in touch with you to find out more or pick your brains, how should they contact you?
Various different ways. They can abuse me on Twitter if they so wish. I'm G Shown EG, which is GSHONEEG. Email address is graham.shown@egi.co.uk. So go for it and do that. Otherwise, you can just at Estates Gazette, and I'm sure it'll be passed over to me by whoever's admining the account that day. But yes, please do get in touch if you have any questions or queries about the report. I mean, what's been really cool so far is some very nice feedback already, and I think people wanting to use it in other guises as well, which is what we want. We want to kind of add to the general national conversation, which again, as I mentioned at the start, I think was a little bit kind of wayward on offices initially, and hasn't been great subsequent to that. So, but yeah, hopefully people are kind enough to read it anyway.
Yep, definitely download it, read back and feedback, and look out for the next report coming from Graham and or James Child, who also works in our very excellent intelligence team here at EG. So Graham, thanks so much for that insight. Thank you so much for pulling the report together, and let's catch up for the next one in the near future. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. And don't forget, if you want to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial data real estate.